is a joint talk with Ukash. He'll tell you the real stuff, and I'll just entertain you until the room is full. So, and I have to. I'm getting used to this. We start by acknowledging the John Templeton Foundation, who is supporting Ukash. So I want to talk about chiral, or we will talk about chiral spin liquid, in particular chiral spin liquid and the immersion anions that we obtain in a Kagome lattice mod insulator. And Roger, let me start also by thanking Roger for organizing this wonderful workshop. You know, Roger is a hunter. You know that, right? Hunter? Hunter. He goes around, kills stuff. Is that okay? You're a hunter, right? Okay. So we always wanted to be like Roger, but we hunt anions. So the first part of the talk is about, you know, we are, Ukash and I are hunters. We hunt anions. And I want to describe our wish list, what we would like to be able to do. And then I will introduce. So this is what we would like to be able to do in order to find anions. Starting from a microscopic Hamiltonian, our goal is to go and hunt anions. And so I'll talk about ground state degeneracy, SNT matrices, and edge spectrum. And then I'll introduce a model, the Haber model, or starting from a Haber model on the Kagome lattice. So that's going to be a Haber model with a magnetic field on the Kagome lattice. We'll quickly see that we can derive an effective spin model on the Kagome lattice, which is the usual Heisenberg exchange, but we'll have some magnetic field and also some chiral term there, three spin term there. And that's when I will hand over to Ukash, and he'll take this Hamiltonian and literally destroy it. And he'll be able to tell us about the ground state degeneracy, the SNT matrices for the emergent anion model, and also the edge spectrum. Okay, so that's what we want to do here. And if you want to learn more about this, so the first part of my part of the talk that corresponds to work we did, Ukash and I published last year, and the particular model we analyze, you can find the details in this paper, in a collaboration with Bella Bauer, people in at Station Q and Santa Barbara, and then also now in Germany. And you know, these are good times for this type of research. So we submitted to Nature Physics. That's the type of thing. And we got accepted in Nature Physics STAR. If you want to know what STAR means. But it's still good stuff. All right, so let's go hunting, okay? So the first thing we want to do, if you want to find, you are given this Hamiltonian, you want to know, sorry?
That looks hunter, looks like.
Yeah, there is no correlation between the drawing and the reference. That's just, coincidence. So anyway, we want to hunt anions, and the first thing we look when they give us a Hamiltonian, we try to find out whether when we put it on a torus, we find that the ground state is degenerate. Okay, that's the first thing we want to do. And so, for instance, if this was the toric code, as you know, we would expect four ground states or four-fold degenerate ground state space. In practice, we will be dealing with finite toruses, and we won't have a tori. Oh, this has been recorded too. All right. Tori. And so when you put this in a finite system, you expect that the ground state degeneracy, unless you are dealing with a fixed point Hamiltonian, which is not the case here, you expect the ground state degeneracy to be broken. Okay, so instead of having four ground states, we expect to have four low energy states with some difference in energy, which is exponentially suppressed with this the relevant distance size on the torus. Okay, so, and in particular, we are going to be dealing with, we'll be interested in the case where we have a torus where in the x direction, the x direction is much larger than the y direction. Okay, and that's going to be very useful, actually. Because under these circumstances, and assuming that all the sizes are larger than the correlation length in the system, then what you can show is that the ground state degeneracy occurs in a very interesting basis. So, sorry, the ground state degeneracy is broken in a basis, okay, of a stage, which is very, very interesting. So it will be, for instance, for the theory code, we would have that the ground state degeneracy is broken in a basis where each state, each eigenstate of the Hamiltonian has a well-defined flux inside the torus. Okay? That's going to be very, very important. That's actually the key of many of the things that we'll be able to do. So we'll study finite cylinders where one direction is much larger than the other. And in that case, we expect the ground state degeneracy to be broken into eigenstates in a basis where there is a well-defined flux inside the torus. Good. So that would be point one in our anion hunter's wish list. This is an anion. The second thing we want to do now that we have, so it turns out that we will have as many anion species as ground states on the torus, and the next thing to do is to try to characterize what type of anion model we have, okay? And that's where the S and T modular matrices play a role. So basically, we would like to be able to talk about what type of statistics these anions have, right? We can talk about self-statistics and mutual statistics. So let's talk about self-statistics first. So this is about what happens if you have your ground state, and now you create two quasi-particles, two anions of the same type, and you exchange them. The wave function in that case for bosons would remain the same, for fermions would acquire minus sign, and for anions, it will acquire some phase. I'm going to assume we have a billion anions from now on to simplify things. So the T matrix, the modular or topological T matrix, is just a matrix that parametrizes, that tells you about what type of phases you would expect to obtain. It's the self-statistics of the emergent anion model. And so for the toric code, for instance, we would have that this is it's always a diagonal matrix, and in the diagonal we'll find precisely these phases that are acquired in exchanging two anions. And so for the toric code, then we have four entries, and specifically these entries are 1, 1, 1, minus 1, with the meaning, for instance, remember that this minus 1 is telling us that if you take two of these composite epsilon particles and you exchange them, you'll obtain a minus 1. So these guys are self fermions. So what we would like to be able to do is we would like to be able to compute this T matrix. Okay? What else is that we would like to do? We would like to compute also this S matrix, this other S matrix. And this one has to do with what happens if you take two quasi-particle excitations, two anions of different types, and you encircle one around the other. Right? You would like to know, you would like to characterize the mutual statistics. So specializing again, just for concreteness with the toric code, this would be, the S matrix would be a 4×4 matrix. And let me mention that the S matrix contains more than just the mutual statistics. So if you look at the S matrix, if we could compute this matrix, these 16 elements, then we can read from the first column or first row, we can read the quantum dimensions of all the anion species and the total quantum dimension as well. And so for the toric code, this is how it looks like. If we can compute this, the S matrix for the toric code, we would obtain this matrix, which says that the quantum dimensions are 1 for all the species. These are a billion anions, and then the total quantum dimension is 2. And if you read, for instance, this entry here says a minus 1. Well, this is identity, electric, magnetic, composite. So this entry here corresponds to what happens if you take a magnetic charge and you encircle it with an electric charge. So a minus 1 here means that when we encircle, we use an electric charge to encircle a magnetic charge, we obtain a phase minus 1, okay? So all this information is codified in the S matrix, and there is more. So for instance, you can also read the fusion rules from the S matrix. If you have two anions of type I and J, you would like to know if they fuse into K. That's given by some coefficients which can be obtained from the S matrix. All right? So if we manage to get the S matrix, we'll obtain the fusion rules for our anion model. Hi. Apparently there are things that you cannot get from the S matrix. So I don't know the physical significance of those, but you cannot completely characterize, or it's not known that you can completely characterize an anion model just from the S and T metrics. No, in the toric code, I think that that's complete. That
if,
I don't think that there is any known example where giving the S and T metrics is not enough, but there is no, why am I answering? Zhenghan, what's the situation?
Well, I think you said it right.
Okay, so. There is no known counterexample?
I would have just been well determined.
So
there's no reason to believe that it's not a completely contained yet. It's not true.
SNT.
S&T.
Right. But the good news is that, you know, so quite often S&T is enough to completely determine for all known anion models, S&T would tell you exactly which anion model.
Topological
S&T
is like
Okay. So the conclusion is that we want to get S&T. And for instance, for the toric code, just to, you know, to continue with simple examples, if we fuse M a magnetic charge and an electric charge, then we get the fermionic charge. So that's that. All this information is contained there. Now, this is information about excited states, right? It's about excitations, quasi-particle excitations. But luckily, we can extract all this information just from knowledge of the ground state. Okay, we don't even need to compute excited states and excite to, you know, produce two excitations and braid them or exchange them. All this information can be obtained just from overlaps of ground states. And that's where that particular basis that we had of ground states is key. And this was something I learned from the Berkeley group, and that signal, well, that was the starting point for Rukesh and I to start working on extracting this information. So as an example of what you can do, if you had these ground states with well-defined flux inside the cylinder and you have sufficient symmetries in your problem, then you can rotate this basis and obtain a basis with well-defined flux outside the cylinder. And then just by computing the overlap on the square, if this was the square lattice, this is just an example, okay, the type of things you can do. So if you had a square lattice, by computing this overlap between ground states, you would obtain already the S matrix.
I think this result only holds if you assume you have some additional assumptions that the anions transform trivially under the symmetries. There's two assumptions. One, you have to have the symmetry, and two, they have to transform in sort of the simplest way under the symmetries. Otherwise, you could get other factors.
I actually would like to learn more about this because it's not clear to me how the symmetries affect the ground states. Or, I mean, if you had actually quasi-particle excitations, then you would have to explain how they transform under the symmetry. For the ground states, it's not clear to me whether they are still singlets.
Okay, we can talk
But that's indeed a very important point.
So that's just a comment from making a general question.
Yeah, I'm making a comment that you can't compute S in general. I don't think you can compute it in general unless you make some additional assumptions about how the anions transform.
So maybe I'm just saying simple models where there is no additional symmetry, or we don't need to worry about additional symmetry considerations. That's the way
The assumption is that the symmetry, the anions transform trivially under the symmetry. So like Chauvin has a model, for example, where you do a translation and an E turns into an M. So you can imagine a situation where a rotation turns an E into an M, mm-hmm. and then that would give you some strange results if you use this approach.
All right, that's true. Yes.
Is this overlap size independent? This overlap of the wave.
It should be size independent. I mean, if you have finite size effects still in your ground state in your system, then they will affect the quality of the S matrix you extract. But if you don't have finite size effect, then this should be system size independent. All right. Okay, so I have to rush actually because I'm just repeating well-known facts here, and we want to get to Ukesh. So the third point, right? So this is another anion hunter. So in some cases, if the topological order, the emergent topological order, is chiral, as in the fractional quantum Hall effect, or if we have a chiral spin liquid, then we expect a universal edge, so gapless edge states, which are universal, and learning about those, again, could tell us about what type of anion model we have. And then again, this is about characterizing not just the ground state of the system, but the low energy states. But again, it turns out that you can learn a lot already about the edge physics by just capturing the ground state, in the sense that the number of results point out that the relationship between the ground state, sorry, the low energy physics at the edge, okay? So that would be having an edge. So the lower energy, the spectrum at low energies in the edge is related in some way to the an entanglement cut on the ground state. So again, if you have the ability to compute ground states, you can extract also information about the low energy states in the presence of an edge. And I think I need to rush. So let me say again, summary. These are the hunters, and we say we wish we could do the following. We wish we could obtain a complete set of ground states on the torus with well-defined anion charge inside. And then from it, we wish we could extract the S and T modular matrices and entanglement spectrum. So from the first one, we learn about the topological excitations in the bulk. And from the second, we may learn about the edge theory. All right, so that would be a way of getting the anion model. Now, the other thing I wanted to introduce is this model. So what model will Lukasz talk about? Well, we start on the Kagome lattice with a Haber model in the presence of a magnetic field. So we have a Haber model means we have electrons hopping between the sides, and then we also have an on-site repulsion. And then the presence of the magnetic field is felt in two different ways. The first one is this extra term in the Hamiltonian, right? So one polarization is advantaged or favored over the other. So there is a Zeeman term. And the other effect is the presence of this hopping amplitudes. They are complex. They are not real. And such that when you go around a triangle, they produce some factor here, and then a phase. Again, there is a flux, okay, when you close a triangle. All right, so from this model, now we would like to derive a low energy or an effective model at half filling. We go to half filling, and then we use perturbation theory, T over U, and actually we don't do any of that because we go to Lessig. He did that for us a long time ago. And so from this model, you can see that you derive an effective spin one half model on the Kagome lattice, and this effective spin model, spin one half model, has a number of terms. So let me insist that if we didn't have magnetic field, we would only have the first term, right? In the absence of magnetic field, we would only have the first term. And when we switch on the magnetic field, the leading terms that we create are this SZ and then this chiral term here involving three spins at a time around a triangle. Okay, and then other contributions which are subleading in T over U. Good. And then, so that's the Hamiltonian that Lukasz is going to analyze. That's the Hamiltonian for which we would like to find out whether there is an emergent anion model. And just to mention, just to remind you that if we remove all the magnetic field, we are left with this term, the Heisenberg Kagome, which has received a lot of attention in recent times. So maybe we'll learn also something about this model here. All right, and then I'm just going to hand it over to Lukasz. Right? Yeah.
So if phi is not equal to zero,
yes.
Then you get so if it's zero, you get probably gas bands. What is the
next question? I don't know.
Maybe the single particle.
Right, but I don't know if you get
that. You have to probably get a couple of light bands, right? That's probably that.
Yes, I think it's a good question, but then on-site interaction is, we are in the lead of some large units. I don't believe in working on it.
Just
a little bit of, you can learn about it. So the answer is I don't know. Maybe somebody knows. All right.
Do you want a minute?
20 minutes.
Thanks. Does it work? No? Okay. Right, so we've just heard a very exciting story. Thanks, Kifra. So it looks like catching anions is so simple nowadays, right? So it's just, you just have to make sure that you have a complete set of ground states on a torus. You just make sure that they have all well-defined flux inside the torus. And then you just calculate an entanglement spectrum, and then as a simple exercise, you calculate all these overlaps, and you can learn about S&T matrices, S&T topological matrices. So I guess my task here is to show you that this can be done, yes. And we can make this Onion Hunter's wish list come true, okay. So I'm gonna do this with the model that Gifre was talking about. So we've heard about Onion Hunter's wish list. So if you want, here's the Onion Hunter's weapon or whatever tools. So as you heard, we want to start from a microscopic lattice Hamiltonian. And our task here is to obtain a complete set of ground states on a torus with well-defined flux. So our tool is good old BMRG. And we take our Hamiltonian. We first put it on a on an infinite cylinder. And then as Gifre argued, we know that every ground state we obtain has a well-defined flux inside an infinite torus. So the first step is to obtain a complete set of ground states on an infinite cylinder. And then once we have that complete set of ground states, we can identify DH theory by looking at the entanglement spectrum. That's one thing to do. And the other thing is to use some dirty tricks to bring a ground state on an infinite cylinder to a torus, and then with this property. This property should remain. Once we have a complete set of ground states on a torus, then we calculate certain overlaps, and we can learn about S&T matrices. All right, so let me remind you of the model that I'll be dealing with. We are on a Kagome lattice. We have a nearest neighbor Heisenberg term plus free body chiral term on every triangle of the Kagome lattice here and here, plus a magnetic field. I have two parameters in the Hamiltonian. One is the strength of the magnetic field, and the other one is angle theta that says the relative strength between Heisenberg interaction and the free body chiral term. Let me start drawing a phase diagram. Not mine. I'll start with a zero magnetic field. Here is my angle theta. At this point, Hamiltonian reduces to just a free body chiral term. And that was your last slide. You didn't explain that, but we expect to see, we have some argument that we should expect a chiral spin liquid. On the other side, we have a famous Heisenberg point, and we have a lot of evidence that one should expect a Z2 spin liquid there. Okay, so here comes our result. So we found chiral spin liquid from here all the way up to here. Okay, let me say it slowly. There's a chiral spin liquid on a Kagome lattice very close to the Heisenberg point. Okay, before I show you the evidence, let me extend the phase diagram with a non-zero magnetic field. To do this, first I am looking the caps and fidelities. So what do we have here? Horizontal axis, we have a angle theta, top panel, singlet gap, middle panel, triplet gap, bottom panel, fidelity. So what do I see here? The triplet gap remains large in the entire region, but singlet gap is also large, but it looks like it may want to close somewhere here. Okay, but okay, before you kill me with questions, I want to reduce your expectations, okay? So there are points here that I trust more than the others. Okay? So I trust my method here. And then it breaks down. Okay? So, you know, I'm an honest person, okay? I don't want to claim more than I really calculated. So it's okay. And you will see evidence everywhere here, and then it's all gone, okay? So I can go quite close to that. So I believe in all those points, also in this one, 0.05 pi, you will see some results, but then I don't know what is happening. Up to 12, so that's six triangles. Another slide, okay. Okay, let's have a look at the fidelities between nearby points in theta. So the fidelity is one everywhere here, almost every almost one everywhere here, and then it suddenly drops down. So it tells me that there's probably an extended phase here, and then there's a possible phase transition to a mysterious phase.
So it's the epsilon is the fixed value all the way over.
Yes, well, so I take this point and this point, and I calculate the fidelity, and this is the result, okay? I take this point and this point, calculate the fidelity, and it's large, it's almost one, right? So all these points, very similar, but this point is very different from the other.
What do you call fidelity? Is it the fidelity?
Yeah, of course I'm cheating, right? So it's, You take MPS, you take a mixed transfer matrix, and you look for the largest. So if it's one, then the same state. If it's smaller than one, okay.
Size of A is a ground state.
What is a
ground state wave function? So okay. So the first element of the
what's
that?
Little a.
Okay. So ask you from. Mentioned, Anion Hunters has his wish list, right? So the first list, the first element ground state degeneracy. So I put my Hamiltonian on an infinite cylinder and I ask for how many ground states that I have. And I see two ground states, right? Whenever I try it for the third time, I'm getting either the one or the other. So A labels the ground states, right? No, for a given A, okay? So black one, one ground state. For some reason, I call that identity, okay? And red one, for some reason, I call that semi. Okay? So how do I get a phase diagram? So if we have a triplet gap, if we have calculated the triplet gap, then automatically we are getting a lower bound for the strength of the magnetic field that could be applied without destroying a phase, right? So this orange thing here is the minimal phase in theta versus magnetic field. Okay, so I'll be showing you results for those two points, just make it more dramatic, okay? So I put at this side, close to some phase transition, another one, and close to the phase transition here. I'll be showing you results for those two points. Okay, let me start fulfilling the Anion Hunter's wish list. So another point, entanglement spectrum. So if I have a complete set of ground states on an infinite cylinder, I can take given one, calculate reduced density matrix of a half of infinite cylinder, and have a look at its spectrum. So I'm going to do this for each ground state that I got. And just to remind you, we are at the purely purely Carroll point over here. OK, so what do I get? The left panel. This is the entanglement spectrum that I got for the state number one that I call identity. The right panel results for the second ground state that I got, which I'll call semi. What do we see here? Here's a spectrum of the entanglement Hamiltonian versus momentum in the transverse direction of the infinite cylinder. So what I mean, I take every eigenvector of the entanglement Hamiltonian and calculate the momentum for that. And then let's have a look at the spectrum. So first of all, what do we see? It's organized in towers, in tilted towers. It's not symmetric at all, right? They're pointing one direction, very chiral, right? Okay, and we go to every tower and we can calculate or we can check what is the degeneracy in momentum of the states that we have here. So let's do this for the middle tower here. Come here, there's one state, then the next energy level, one state, then this group, the same momentum, two states, another group, three states, another group in momentum, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 states. Right? So there's a pattern, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5. It appears in every tower, here and also here. Check. All right, so these are special numbers. They appear in many places. So for example, you can take indistinguishable bosons and equally spaced energy levels, and then you ask yourself in how many ways I can distribute those bosons such that I reach a given total energy, and you are getting those numbers, right? These are called partition numbers.
Is the separation into momentum is automatic, or is it by
looking at? No. It's so this. So this separation is two pi over the width of the cylinder, which is 12.
Okay. Yeah.
So I have six different values, okay. And then of course I extend it over 2 pi periodicity just to make this clearer. Here and here, okay?
2 pi
is not the problem. No, I have less than 5 minutes. Yeah, I will. Okay. So that's enough information to identify DH theory. So it's chiral SU2 Vesemino-Witten. Just to let you know, you have integer representation of SU2 group in the identity sector and half integer representation in the semion sector, right? Singlet, triplet, doublet, quantuplet, and so on, right? Okay. All right, just to let you know, we can play this game everywhere here, and then let me show you results at this edge of the phase diagram, so it's qualitatively the same, right? You can play the same game, the same degeneracies, energy levels, and so the message here, this entanglement spectrum is compatible with the sectors of SU2 level 1 Vesemino-Witten. All right, the last point, the Anion Hunter's wish list, S&T matrices. So as you remember, we have to go to the finite torus, and we have to make sure that we have well-defined flux inside. So I take my infinite cylinder, I play some dirty game to pack it on the torus, and then Kagome-Lattice is a 60-degree rotational symmetry, so I can calculate actually S&T matrices in one shot, and this is the dirty numbers that I got. So that's the result for DS matrix, T matrix, and we are here. So I group the result in two pieces, two columns. So this column is just the exact matrices for the chiral semion model, and this is, if you want, the deviation. So we see that when it comes to DS matrix, we are getting 2 digits of accuracy, and the quality of T matrix is more or less the same. So that's your question, what are the finite size effects? Here are the finite size effects. Okay, so now you open the table for all possible Anion models, and there is just one model with this error bars, okay? And it's, of course, chiral semion. Question? Yes, it's also expected. All right, so it's time to catch the monster. So what do we learn from DS matrix? Just to remind you first, we take a look at the first row, quantum dimensions, 1, 1, it's a Abelian model, total quantum dimensions, square root of 2. We don't need topological entanglement entropy, we get it for free. Mutual statistics, so I take two monsters, I encircle one monster over the other, and they pick up phase of minus one. I can take two monsters and fuse them, and they turn out to be a trivial monster, right? So I can apply Verlinde formula to S matrix and come up with the Z2 fusion rules. What do I learn from T matrix? The prefactor gives me the topological central charge. In this case, it's 1 up to 1%. And this numerical calculation. Then I have a look at the diagonal element of the T matrix. Then I learn about topological spin. So now if I take two monsters, I swap their positions, they pick up a phase of I. So this monster is really like a half a Fermi, right? So I would have to exchange it twice to get the fermionic sign minus one. is over, right? Okay, so just to let you know, we consider perturbations of Hamiltonian. We consider Jaworzynski-Moria interaction, and then we could add a lot of that. So this string of Jaworzynski-Moria interaction is comparable with the gap that I got. And then I guess we got tired because we just check one point in the phase diagram, 0.15 pi. We added next nearest neighbor Heisenberg interaction, and we found broad range of parameters, but the phase is stable, and also XXC anisotropy, it's also quite stable.
So in a previous phase diagram, if we do the extrapolation, the localized goes to zero.
Where?
As a function of G, B, and
M. Here. So okay, this is a Heisenberg point,
yeah.
And this is pure chiral point.
Right.
So. I don't trust my method here. I don't know what is happening. Here. I don't know what's going on. So I trust it from here to here. Method works well. I'm happy with this. Then it breaks down. So don't believe here, okay? Don't believe me. Yeah.
Extraction of these SMT matrices. S is easy to extract when you have 90-degree rotation symmetry, and T when you have something like 60-degree.
So if you have 90-degree rotation, you rotate, then you get only S matrix. But if you have 60-degree rotation, then 60-degree rotation, if you write it in terms of SMT generators, it's something like S times T to the minus 1. So actually, you can extract SMT from this one equation if you use the properties of SMT matrices, which is the first row of S matrix is real positive and T matrix is diagonal. Then it is enough information to extract S and T matrices from this one equation. Okay? So we are just lucky. There's 60 degree symmetry.
Just for a special case when you have
one or two
by two?
No, it's general.
So saying that
for any number of, yeah. So this is just 60 degree rotation. You can get S and T in one shot. All square lattice can be.
So it's proof the phase
bar is
consistent with it, the going zero, the order going away exactly at the
universal
point.
Yeah. I don't want to claim more than I see in my mind. I don't know.
Central charge, it comes out of 60-degree rotation, or you fix it from the chiral, from the entanglement spectrum?
No, it's a prefactor of the T matrix. It's a definition. T matrix.
I know it's the definition, but does it actually come out when you do the
this is an exact in that direction. This is a result of a calculation. Okay. So this prefactor is a phase that you take identity, you rotate by 60 degree, and the phase that is picked up gives you central charge.
But how do you actually do the numerical computation? S is the overlap.
I calculate S and T in one shot. So this is 60 degree rotation. So what I have is a torus, okay? I rotate by 60 degree and I calculate the overlap.
Okay.
So the overlap is 2x2 matrix, right? I take identity, I calculate an overlap with identity. I take identity, calculate overlap with rotated semion, okay, and so on.
Okay.
So I'm getting four complex numbers, and from those four numbers, using some properties of S and T, as I mentioned before, you can extract both of them. In one calculation. All right, so conclusions. We started from a Humboldt model. We turn it a large U expansion. We turn it to this friendly looking spin half Hamiltonian that I can deal with. With DMRG, we calculated, we managed to find a chiral spin liquid in broad range of parameters. How do I convince you that we have a chiral spin liquid? Well, took a look at the entanglement spectrum, and it's consistent with SU2 level 1 Vesumin-Witten. If that's not enough, we calculated S and T matrices, and we found a perfect agreement with chiral semion. Right. Just to mention some work in progress. So again, that's a phase diagram just extended to the negative values of theta, and of course we are interested in what is happening here. Okay. And that's it. Thanks.
Any thoughts on why even a relatively small system, this particular Kaggenberg model converges so well?
Small correlation.
So your gaps are not that large, right?
Yeah. Let's say we can, well, okay, is it small where you have to go to fixed triangles? That's really the limit of
yeah.
how much you can do right now.
But in the Perrick code, the gap code can be as arbitrarily small, and you have zero correlation length.
Yeah.
So, you know, the relation between correlation length and the gap.
Yeah.
Yes. So the first thing to check is actually the correlation length and how it compares to the largest system that you can build.
So how does the correlation vary as you approach theta equals zero?
So this small here goes up a little bit here, goes up a little bit here, and explodes.
It explodes. This is just how you're measuring, just the two spin?
No, actually we give an upper bound by studying transfer matrix, NPS transfer matrix. We can give an upper bound for any correlation. So it's on the one lattice side, if I remember, here. And then my thing is that the one ground, so here I'm able to get two ground states also. So one is totally under control. So this is the one that you mentioned bitwise for. But the other one, so it's totally out of control. The correlation is strong. It looks bad.
So approaching the transition point, did you see this close of the triplet gaps? Some bit surprising of triplet gap. So
no
triplet
gap.
Yeah, triplet it's a gap you plot. Right? So the support
system.
Yeah. So it should close if it's a second order.
No, we see that the singlet gap. But as I told you, I want to talk about this way.
Did you see any suppressing kind of this point of picture? This value become much smaller?
Not for triplet. Only for silver.
So it looks like the picture could be consistent with some kind of first order transition right at the zero. Maybe there's spontaneous symmetry. Spontaneous symmetry breaking at the zero, they are just like this first order symmetry.
I wish it could be.
So there's nothing consistent with what's white transition. I mean, you didn't actually show anything that it's.
I'm not talking. I refuse to talk about Heisenberg. I have some bad memories, okay? I refuse to talk about Heisenberg.
Well, you have one point.
So once I have resolved, then I give a talk, okay? And then I'll show it.
But is it significantly more difficult?
Significantly more difficult.
So one intuition is that you have a chiral spin liquid on one side and the opposite chirality on the other. So a natural candidate to have in the middle is to double model.
Double set.
But this is much harder to take care of.
Yeah,
just one piece.
Kind of like worried and anti-worried.
I don't refuse to talk about it because I'm in the population.
Well, I'm just going to say that the singlet gap did look really consistent with what Steve had found before. I mean, you didn't actually, I don't know if you calculated it right there, but it was sort of going right to the value you'd get. The singlet gap was very consistent with previous Heisenberg point calculations.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So, a short question. The triplet gap, you have a point there. Is it early calculation? I mean, at Heisenberg point, we have a. There is a point there.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk about it.
That's just the white cubes. Sorry, is that just the white cubes, the circle, or is it yours? That point, the Heisenberg.
Down to zero.
But this is a triplet gap.
Yes, is it more recent? Heisenberg
point and here's a point.
So this gap is on top of one of the ground states, the one that can be computed.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why he refuses to talk about what happens there is to make a clear difference between when you're in the chiral phase, where you can compute a complete set of ground states,
mm-hmm.
they give you consistent results, and you can compute gaps on top of all of those ground states.
There is only one ground state.
And here, in the middle, you just have one ground state under control. The other one, we have not even been able to converge the correlation length. We don't know how large it is, but it's on the order of the width of the cylinder for sure.
So that tells you that you shouldn't trust, at least for that kind. And then there are probably two more. You want to take your stuff?